I actually feel it's worked to our advantage over the years. And like I was saying to someone else, there could not truly have been a better time to be a young woman of color.
Hello and welcome. I'm Shashank Mehta, founder at The Whole Truth Foods. As the founder of a young startup, I've seen firsthand the immense challenges that come with starting and scaling a company. No founder can be fully prepared for what entrepreneurship looks like. But we can definitely learn from the giants who've come before us. Stalwart founders who've built great companies and who've perhaps faced those very same challenges and overcome them. On this podcast, I speak to them, founder to founder, and try and unearth the whole truth of starting up. Let's begin. Hey folks, welcome, and let's welcome Priyanka, who's on the show today. Priyanka is an all-round businesswoman. She's the co-founder and chief partner at the law firm Anand, Anand & Khimani, where she represents everyone in Bollywood from Sonu Nigam to Anurag Kashyap. She's also the chairperson of the India chapter of Women in Music. She's also a former model and a screenwriter. And somehow between all of this, she's also finds the time to be super duper fit. It's a privilege to have you today with us, Priyanka. Thank you so much for making the time.
Thank you so much for having me here.
Awesome. Priyanka, I want to dive right in and ask a question that's been burning in my head ever since I heard about you having started up a law firm. I want you to give us a peek into how does that world of starting up in law look like as compared to this, you know, VC-funded unicorn crazy world.
I am so glad that somebody is finally asking me about it as if it was yet another startup or another business, because for years in my head, it's run like a business, right? And I often say that why is a law firm partner not looked at as an entrepreneur? Because that's really what you're doing. So much so that actually, if you look at a lot of different business rankings, awards, etc., I don't think lawyers are looked at or law firm partners are looked at as entrepreneurs. It doesn't exist.
But how do you contrast? Like, you see so many of these other businesses around you, which are these VC-funded ones, huge teams, scaling to billions of dollars, etc.
Right.
Compare and contrast, like, how does your world look as a law firm?
Actually, it's very similar, except, of course, we don't have rounds of funding because of various bar council restrictions. But other than that, it is run like any other organization, right? You have to have processes in place. There's, in some firms, there's a lot of hierarchy. You're discussing policies. You have culture issues. You want to have your image, your messaging, making sure people are looking at you in the right sense for what you are, you know, what is your sort of brand key, as they say. I think it's literally all the ingredients that you would see in any other startup or in any other venture. And I feel, therefore, at least in my head, I've always run the firm more like an entrepreneur. And I think that's part of the reason that we've seen the kind of success that we have in such a short span of time. And I say this often, even in our internal team meetings, that the inspiration, the motivation is always to see what other businesses are doing, not necessarily what others in the fraternity are doing, right? And I think because we are wired like that, we'll pick up lots of different things from different businesses. And a lot of people, even when they come into the firm, find it very unusual, but they find it very refreshing that, oh, this is how a law firm is functioning.
Awesome. I want to unpack so much of that. But quick question first, how big is the team?
We're close to 30 people right now. I run the team in Bombay, and it's a mixed bag. But I must tell you that we're all under 40.
Wow.
And we're all, I think, 99% female attorneys or female-led firm. Our CEO is also female. All our practice leads are female. I who's at the helm of affairs, obviously. But I get teased about it quite often, but I know secretly a lot of people also admire that we're so many women in the firm. Also because, especially in India, it's a tough profession to be a part of. It's given our gender. You have a lot of preconceived notions about lots of stereotypes attached to women lawyers. Sometimes either they're two extremes, right? Either they think that you're going to be too aggressive, too difficult, too nasty, too argumentative, or they're going to think that, oh, but can she get the job done? You know, too delicate, polite, won't be able to get in and get her hands dirty. So, you know, it's nice that we've been able to, you know, have this setup. And it's actually been that this ratio has been skewed ever since the beginning. And I'm very happy about it.
Amazing. And I assume this is by design.
No, actually, it's not by design. It's not that we don't want male attorneys. I don't want to send the wrong signal. We do have a couple and they're amazing boys. And I think they fit in so beautifully. And it's amazing to see everybody work together. But no, it's not by design. It's just happened. And I'm happy.
I'm very curious. I was as it is going to ask about culture, because like as a founder myself, the thing I worry most about, to be honest, is culture. I believe that's where, you know, people and culture is where all output begins with. In a relatively smaller setup of, 20, 30 odd folks, where I assume that the nature of the job is that everyone is more an individual contributor, unlike again, in a large 300, 500 people startup where people are more like cogs in a wheel and there is hierarchy and stuff. Tell me, how do you think about culture, and especially layering in the fact that you have a, you know, one gender dominated team in these two contexts, small team, largely female? How do you think about culture and culture building?
A lot of thought goes into us defining and setting the right culture. I think all our activities, team meetings, when we sit down for, you know, to doing exercises, the conversation, everything I think has only one focus: culture. And that on my part is very, very conscious. One of the reasons that I decided to set up the firm when I did that early on in my career and when I was so young was because I had been in a lot of different workplaces, right? From, you know, different, actually I'd worked with Indian markets, Western markets. I'd seen a lot of businesses across sectors, including law firms. I feel that especially in an Indian workplace, it is a lot more toxic and abusive than we realize or than we call it out for. And, you know, it was one thing that was very critical to me. And that was the primary reason when I ventured out and set up Khemani & Associates first, is to be able to have a place where names will come, names will go, people will come, people will go. But what I want this place to be known for is culture. And again, I speak of it in an industry where, especially the legal fraternity, you have horrible work hours. You tend not to have work-life balance, and people almost wear it as a badge of honor, right? It's such a difficult place for women to work in, let alone single parents or young mothers or individuals who don't have the kind of support at home, or even girls, right, who probably come from sometimes traditional families or culturally where people are not comfortable that you're working all odd hours. It doesn't factor any of that in. And to me, that bothers me so much that I just am determined at every stage that what are we doing to weed out culture? So I think the two things for me that are critical is it a healthy environment? Culturally, are we being inclusive? Are we being respectful? Are we being mindful of, you know, different aspects just beyond work? Two, I'm not a big fan of hierarchy, and I feel that that's one thing that works for us, especially as a small organization. I feel the lesser layers you have in one hand talking to the other, the better it is. We actually encourage a lot of free horizontal communication. So, in fact, in our interview process, we'd often have someone who is at the same PQE as the person that we are interviewing, just to see culturally, how is this person reacting? Do you get offended that someone with your level of experience or even junior to you is talking to you? And to me, even our entire interview process is actually more skewed towards first identifying the right cultural fit, because I feel if you're a smaller team, one rotten apple, right? You don't have time for that. And the other thing that we're very conscious about is any form of toxicity, right? If you have a problem, don't talk to somebody else and, you know, vent about it and moan about it. Sure, you'll do that, but we encourage people to communicate. And I feel, again, it's maybe an Indian workplace thing, or it's also, I feel, a gender-related thing at some level, where women find it more difficult to have difficult conversations in a workplace. So you're encouraged that say something out. There's an art to doing it. I'll conduct these meetings where, you know, I'm sort of sharing all sorts of tips, hacks that have helped me over a period of time. But I think in a smaller team, culture and weeding out toxicity and not having too much hierarchy are the three things that have helped me tremendously.
Amazing. If I didn't tell anyone that we are having a chat with the founder of a law firm, they wouldn't be able to, like, this is exactly the culture conversation in all these startups, which are known as startups. And you know, but the other angle I want to touch upon is age. You said you as it is are so young and you started off so young with your own firm. Your team is so young. Whereas as an outsider, as a layman, my picture of a lawyer in India is old and male, like really old and really male. So
you're absolutely right.
Yeah. So tell me, how does age impact culture? Like, how do you think about those two?
Personally, it used to be a big barrier for me when I started out, especially when I moved, when you were still part of a different setup or a bigger firm or you have names supporting you, it was different. But when I started on my own, every single time, right, no matter what the work profile was or the matter was, the question I would get asked is, aren't you too young to be doing this? Do you have the bandwidth? Do you have the resources, right? Somehow I find, luckily for me, with work speaking for itself and with age now, that question has died down where it doesn't matter. And in fact, I feel that it works as a plus. And now coming to the second part, that how does it affect us as an organization? I actually feel, given that what we're doing, it's one of our biggest strengths that we're such a young, dynamic team, especially given how much technology has penetrated all aspects of our life, right? Of our lives, including what we do as lawyers, right? As advisors, you are working with such diverse tech companies, platforms, or even in traditional sectors, right? Like entertainment, or take banking, take finance, take insurance, take literally anything, and you have some element of technology. So I feel as a younger team, where obviously we've grown up in this age, it's easier for us to grasp it. So I actually feel it's worked to our advantage over the years. And like I was saying to someone else, there could not truly have been a better time to be a young woman of color. These three things. And I think it's just perspective. It's how you choose to look at it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Everything changes with the way you look at the world. Like, that's pretty much the definition of entrepreneurship, where people see problems, someone sees a solution and goes and does it. Right. And I'm extremely excited. Like, I'm imagining a young law graduate and hearing this chat, I would get really, really inspired to do something because I, again, as an outsider, it seems to me, because we don't hear too much about startups in the law space, it seems that everyone goes and joins someone else. No one thinks of starting out. Is that perception true? Like, is there a dearth of startups, or is it just our perception from the outside?
I would say this, you're right. I think there are two schools that have emerged, right? One is obviously young lawyers fresh out of law school who want to go join a larger firm or a counsel's chamber. And I think almost all of us do it, and you must, because there is no beating the experience, right? And we all know with doctors and lawyers, the more you practice, that's why they call it the practice of medicine or law, right? The more you practice, the more you learn, and there's no replacing that. On the other hand, I also see a whole new stream emerging. We're obviously seeing so much on social media, where you're seeing someone young, dynamic, has had a practice. And I'm now starting to see a trend where young lawyers, after 2 years, 3 years, venturing out, a bunch of friends getting together and starting a practice. But, and not that I mean to discourage anyone, but the one thing that I firmly believe in, and again, it's, I think, one key factor that has gotten us to where we are, is that in an age of social media, people only tend to see the outcome or the popularity. I think they forget what actually goes into it. And I feel it's important, and especially if there are any young lawyers or young law students listening to this, is that please don't forget to put in the hard work, the knowledge, the experience. It, you know, all of the accolades, recognition will eventually come to you. If not today, it'll come to you a few years later. even today, I would say 95% of my day actually is focused on doing the dirty work, putting in the hours, doing the reading, building information, gathering knowledge. And I don't think just because that's not on the internet doesn't mean that it's not happening, right? That's the largest part of my day.
Got it. Another parallel in my head, as I'm comparing, as I said, the startup world with that we recognize the startup world and, you know, the law world that we are speaking about, is I see so many, for example, if I take D2C startups that we are a part of that space, so many startups are coming up to fill up need gaps, right? That consumers want clean label food, consumers want Ayurvedic food, consumers want beverages of high protein beverages, and there's a brand propping up for each of them, and hence so many need gaps, and hence so many entrepreneurs jumping to fill those need gaps, right? You spoke of brand building early on in the law space also. What are these gaps there? Like, I've never thought of a law firm as a brand. Like what are these gaps that young entrepreneurial law folks can jump into and say, hey, why isn't there a law firm that does this?
You're absolutely right. And just like you're saying that there are gaps in certain sectors, the same happens with law, right? You'll see a new kind of trend emerging or a new kind of problem constantly coming up, and lawyers will practice areas around it. Take, for example, sexual harassment, right? So with the POSH Act, the Prevention of Sexual Harassment Act, you'll have firms that will build that practice area so that they can help companies understand it. They can help either the accused or the victim understand it. So before you know it, you have a firm either that does only that or that will have that as a separate practice area as we've plugged a gap. Take today data or privacy. So now suddenly you see players emerge that are focusing on data or privacy or data protection law, right? Or you'll have firms that build in. When I say this about machine learning also, right? With AI and all of these different technologies. And I often get asked that, oh, do you think it'll replace lawyers someday? Yes, it probably makes our lives a lot more simpler, and some mundane tasks can be attributed to that, but there's no replacing core lawyering, right? It's like saying that can a robot someday complicate a surgery? No, probably not, right? It's the same with lawyers, like with interpretation. I think only a human mind can come up with that interpretation, because that's the skill, that's the art at the end of the day. That can't be machine learned.
Yeah, and I guess the whole reason why we need the law is because gray areas exist. If it was all black and white, we wouldn't need a judge and a court and a law and a lawyer. As we bring this to a close, I want to actually come to a completely unrelated but guest-related topic. Anyone looking at you would see that you're extremely fit, and we've done our background research, so we know that you're super fit. Tell us about that. How in, like, female founder, law startup, young age, I can't even imagine the number of mountains you've climbed. And yet, between all of that, what are your hacks to keeping as fit as you do?
If you've done your research, you've also probably seen many fat pictures of me, but there's definitely one on my Instagram.
Way of thunder.
No, I think I've had quite the journey, but to give the short version, by and large, I have always been, I grew up as a big girl. I was tall, so not necessarily obese, but just looked big. Then lost the weight when you came to junior college, and pretty much was, you know, okay, not like super fit. I think this is the fittest I have been in my life, not in terms of just the size, but truly in terms of strength and what I'm able to do with my body. But it's taken, I would say, at easily 18, 20 years of being committed to this lifestyle over a period of time, right? And yes, there have been times where I've slipped, I have gained weight. So for instance, when I actually started the firm, in true entrepreneurial style, everything went for a toss. You were, all the rules you set for yourself went out the window. And I've done that, right? Been on that side where you're eating lunch at 5 in the evening, or just eating one big meal sometime at midnight, sleeping all odd hours, no time to exercise because, hey, I've got this startup to run. So I've been there. But again, it takes, you know, slowly getting back on and building small. I say this to a lot of people who talk to me about fitness, that it's a question of building small rituals into your everyday life. Nothing happens overnight. You didn't put on the weight overnight. You're not losing it overnight. You're not changing it overnight. don't build a schedule that's, you know, impossible to stick to. There's Iron Will, which will run out in a few days, weeks, months. Kabhi na kabhi to wo hoga, right? So build chota chota rituals that you know you can stick to, that are easy, that you can accommodate. I have a whole bunch of hacks. I don't
tell us, even tell know. Us the top ones. No, I'm very curious to know your top ones, please.
Okay, I'll tell you. I think my hacks routines keep changing based on where I am. I do have a stressful, what most people might think is stressful, because I travel a lot. Pre-pandemic, of course, there's a lot of travel. You're practically living out of a suitcase. So I go to different cities within the country, or sometimes even to different countries. So it depends on where I am. But I think small things that don't change is, one is I tend to buy my own groceries. It's number one. It's also downtime for me, so I love it. It is. It's a pastime. It's my time. I disconnect from everything. I try not to multitask. I'm not the one doing a call and grocery shopping. I feel groceries need my undivided attention. So I get my own groceries, including going to the local sabzi wala, finding out, maybe haggling a bit to get a good price. But that, I think that's just more satisfaction being an Indian, that I got like that 2 rupees ka discount. But no, I do buy my own groceries, and there's a variety of reasons for that. I think it just subconsciously triggers your mind into what you're eventually going to put into your body. When I'm buying things, even if it's a new product, I take the effort to read what's into it, right? And which is why I like you guys, because it's clean, simple, I understand. When I see all of those something amine and, you know, some alcohol, whatever, I do not understand it. I switch off, and I said, if I can't understand what I'm reading, my body can't understand what when it's eating it. So I don't need it in my system. That's part of the reason why I do my own groceries. The other thing, I pack my own meals. I pack my dabbas. I have multiple dabbas, but I do it again. It's just triggering a signal in your mind. You know what you're going to eat. You are anticipating what you're going to eat for lunch. So it means that my mind doesn't have to think of other alternatives or then make that decision about what am I going to eat now. So I pack my own dabbas. It's a nice morning ritual. Just in the same way, I make my own breakfast. Now, someone who's listening to this is probably wondering, how does she have the time? I don't. It takes a lot of planning, and planning is the only way to make this happen. Very often on a weekend, on a Saturday or a Sunday, I quickly know what I'm going to roughly eat during the week, by and large. And for breakfast, I actually try and sometimes make it the night before. There are lots of recipes, easy hacks. So mostly, usually the day before, I know what my three main meals are going to be the next day, simply because it saves you the time. The other thing is, when you're not making a decision, when you're hungry, you make better food decisions. So plan in advance. Instead of trying to sit and order something when it's lunchtime, you're going to just order, you're going to make a mistake and order something that's probably not good for you. So plan. That's the one thing that has helped me. I also serve my own food, and I think that's part of just culture. We do the same thing in office. Everyone's encouraged that, you know, you don't have this whole culture of somebody bringing you your tea, coffee, picking up your mug, picking up your plate, cleaning it. No, I think it's just how I've been taught, and how the culture that we've set up within the firm. Again, it's part of, I know what's going into my body. The other hack is I carry lots of food and snacks and all sorts of things coming out of my bag. It's a joke for anyone who knows me. When I'm shopping for a bag, shop for a bag, girls, that is going to fit in khana. And, you know, if you have it, all you need to do is reach into it. So I'll have chota dabbas with like either khakras, or again, like I said, it keeps changing based on where I am. But whichever country you go to, you'll find a fruit box, right? You'll find a small box of anything. If nothing, you'll find a banana. Keep it in your bag. It is still emergency food. It's there, right? Equally, you know, bars or energy snacks, just anything. But just keep snacks, keep a bunch of them, so you always have something to dig into. So I carry a lot of tiny food. I also am one of the crazy ones who on a long flight has food in my cabin baggage.
The learning for me there is, being fit is not about depriving yourself of food. It's actually planning so that you have good, clean food around you, so that you don't go and buy that junk that you have access to in a supermarket or in an airport lounge, etc. Yeah. Right?
Absolutely.
This has been like the one of the reasons I love doing this podcast is I always come out extremely inspired, and I am currently in that phase of the journey where I'm barely keeping my head above water in terms of being maintaining fitness, because just started out 2 years back, everything is going into startup, etc. This has been super duper inspirational on multiple levels. I can't even imagine the number of extra obstacles you have to face as a young woman setting up a law practice, and look at how beautifully and amazingly you've done.
Thank you.
Very inspired, and thank you so much for making the time. And for all our listeners, Priyanka actually has a much longer list of hacks that she very sweetly put together, which you can make into a creative and leave as a link below the video. Thank you so much, Priyanka, for making the time for this.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's truly a pleasure.
Pleasure is all ours. Thank you so much. If you like this episode, don't forget to hit like and subscribe to our channel so we can continue making more of these. And tell us who you'd like us to host next in the comments below. Ciao for now.